Well, good morning, and welcome to our Wednesday morning Bible study. And we are continuing through the stories of David in his flight from Saul, the sojourns of David, where he, you know, sort of becomes this Garibaldi-like character, where he's drawing people to himself. And we really begin to see that after this event here we have in chapter 22. But largely, this is what it is. It's David in the wilderness. It's David out there by himself, collecting people, collecting the distraught, the frustrated, the oppressed. And these people are coming to David, and they're seeing him as their king. And in this period, David continues to be persecuted by Saul. He continues to struggle with doubts about the fulfillment of God's prophecy. He struggles with his own nature, his own sinfulness, his own desires. And so David is really portrayed here in this sojourn, this flight from Saul, as a very human person and as a very real person. And I think that that's why such an enormous part of 1 Samuel is dedicated to David in the wilderness. And I think, of course, there are enormous Christological comparisons that we can make with David in his flight from Saul before becoming crowned king, and of course, Jesus in his earthly ministry. I think there's a lot of comparisons that we could make. And maybe we'll do that later. We're not going to do that quite today, but we could do that later. Today, what we're going to do is we're going to go through chapter 22, and we're going to go ahead and just do all of chapter 22. Tomorrow, I think we will try to get really probably all of chapter 23. And so today we're going to do all of chapter 22, even though technically chapter 22 is two different pericopes. So if you want, go ahead and read chapter 22, verses 1 through 23, and then unpause the audio, and we will get started. Okay, so like I said, here we have David, and I'm just going to very briefly gloss over the first five verses here. David goes to Mizpah. Now remember, where has David been? David has he has made his escape from Saul. Jonathan has brought him word that he was in danger. He's made his escape from Saul, and he is now fleeing. He's gone to Nob, the village of the priests, and he's gotten the sword of Goliath, and then he went immediately, at least according to the text, he goes then with no intervention, no intervening events, and he goes to Gath and seeking to have some kind of maybe safe haven, some kind of sanctuary in Philistine territory. Of course, that's not going to happen, and so David feigns madness, and yesterday we looked at Psalm 34. So that's kind of when we are and where we are, and we know who we're talking about. We're talking about David, and we're talking about David's men. So David leaves there. Where is there? Well, David leaves Philistine territory. He goes to the cave of Adullam. His brothers and his family go there and meet him. And then, like I said earlier, this is kind of, we see David, and I think we see more of it later, which I mentioned, but we see David becoming this Robin Hood, this Garibaldi, this Lawrence of Arabia almost, where everybody who is troubled or owed money or was discontented, they gather around David, and he is their leader. And David has about 400 men with him. So David went from there, and he goes to Moab, and he asks the king of Moab, he said, can my family stay here until I know what God is going to do for me? And so the king of Moab agrees, and he says that that would be good. And of course, for the king of Moab, that's not really a totally bad thing. You know, like, Israel and Moab have been enemies before, and David is, through his great-grandmother, Ruth, the Moabitess, he is a Moabite. David is not a purebred Israelite, which means Jesus is not a purebred Israelite. Well, also Jesus is, you know, whether you believe his human nature comes from Mary or not, some people don't, you know, so whether or not you believe in the doctrine of celestial flesh, you have to take into consideration that even if David gets his human nature from Mary, which I believe he did, but even if he gets his human nature from Mary, then he's still not a purebred Israelite, because Mary was a descendant of David, and David was a descendant of Moabites, and he was a descendant of other Gentiles. And so what we see here is that David is telling his family, go to Moab, you'll be safe. And for the king of Moab, this is a pretty good deal, right? Like, everybody has found out that who David is. They know that David is supposed to be the next king. They know that this means trouble for Israel. And so if you're Moab, right, and you're concerned about Israel, you know, growing in power, power and potentially threatening you, then anything that could prolong internal conflict within Israel is a good thing for you, right? Like, we talked about this before with, like, England and the way England influenced continental politics after the rise of the great powers, you know, from really, I mean, probably the late 1400s on, you know, England used money and resources to keep the continent of Europe at each other's throats because, you know, that's good for England, right? Like, if everybody's busy fighting on the continent, then, you know, trade is easy for England. You know, they don't have to compete with everybody. They have to compete with the Dutch because the Dutch really didn't get involved, but you know what I mean. So for the Moabites, this is a good deal, right? Like, and, you know, David is their family, so, you know, why not? And so they do this. And then we see the next part of the story. And this is the part of the story that is significant. Now, by the way, I do want to pause and say, so David has sent his family to Moab. David has tried to escape to Gath. He will escape to Philistine territory. David will write in the Psalms that people have said, go for serve foreign gods. That what David is concerned about is not only that his persecution is unjust and unfair, but that he feels like he's being driven from his inheritance. Okay, now that's a majorly, incredibly important concept for the Jewish mind, the Hebrew mind, the Israelite mind, is being driven from your territorial inheritance. Because that is yours. That is what was given to you by God. And it is your job to steward that land. And so being driven from their inheritance is a major importance. And of course, David says, and people say, go serve foreign gods, which of course is an even greater insult and offense. But David is doing this. And now the story switches back to Saul. Okay, so now we get kind of a flash away. So we followed David really closely. And now we switch back and the camera switches to Saul. So it really kind of helps if you can think of this like in a movie setting, right? So if we have a movie, we see David and David goes to the priests and then he goes to Gath and he runs into trouble and he's like, I got to do something. So he sends his family to Mizpah in Moab. And then total scene change, not just scene change, but total line of story change. And now we're following Saul. And Saul is hot on the trail of David. And so he goes to Nob. And people say, and David, or Saul, comes to the Benjamites. He comes to his own family, and he says, look, is Jesse's son, notice he doesn't call him David, he calls him Jesse's son. By the way, he's also his son-in-law, right? Like, he doesn't say, is my son-in-law. He doesn't say, is David the commander of my armies. He says, is Jesse's son giving fields and vineyards to all of you? Is he making all of you commanders and officers? For all of you have conspired against you, against me. No one informs me when my own son makes an agreement with the son of Jesse. Not, well, you made an agreement with the son of Jesse. Remember, you contracted for the marriage of your daughter, Michael, to David? Remember? That was a thing that you did? Remember? Like, that was your doing, right? Like, you made an agreement with the son of Jesse. You know, he says, no, not one of you feels sorry for me or informs me that my own son has commissioned my own servant to hide an ambush against me, as is the case today. Okay, so what do we see with Saul? And I'm going through this kind of verse by verse rather than giving an overview because I think this is a passage of Scripture that really does well if we're going through section by section, okay? The five questions are useful here, but I think it's more important to kind of go through section by section. And what do we see? Remember, we've gone away from Saul. Last time we saw Saul, he was chucking a spear at his own kid. He is deeply in the throes of madness. And now what do we see? We see him pursuing David. He's sitting under a tree and he's having a pity party. Okay, Saul is not a well man. He's not a well man. He is mentally insane, and he is deeply self-pitying. Okay, deeply self-pitying. By the way, if you want evidence that self-pity is not a godly way of being in the world, take a look at Saul right here. Okay, Saul is the picture of impotent self-pity, which is strange because Saul is a very potent man. Like, I mean, I call it impotent self-pity, but he is a very potent man. He is a strong, brave man and a warrior. He was a capable leader. Like David, even David says, Saul improved the economy of Israel. Saul was a brave warrior. He was as brave as a lion. He was strong. He was fierce. He defended his nation. He defended his people. He strove to do what was good for Israel. Saul was not totally bad. But by worldly standards, we would say Saul was pretty good, actually. Now, his treatment of David was shameful. But what does that all revolve around? It all revolves around self-pity. It all revolves around this total self-directed way of being in the world where everything Saul thinks and everything Saul does is directed towards and concerned about himself. Saul is the picture of selfishness. He's the picture of selfishness. And that is, and what goes hand in hand with selfishness is self-pity. Okay? Nobody feels sorry for me. Get over yourself, man. You're the king. Be a man. Do something. You know, but then we read, but Doeg the Edomite. Where have we heard of Doeg the Edomite? Oh, yeah, he's the chief shepherd of Saul who was there and saw David at Nob. Ah-ha-ha, the story. Now we've got a connection back to the previous part of the story. So, the thick plottens, as they say, you know, the plot thickens. And so he had stationed himself there, and he said, I saw the son of Jesse come to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub at Nob. He inquired of the Lord and gave him provisions. He also gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. Then the king arranged for a meeting with the priest Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, and all the priests of his father's house who were at Nob. And I'm just reading this out loud. I know that you already read this, but it's important sometimes to read things twice. They come to the king. The king says, listen, son of Ahitub. And he says, here am I, my lord. And he says, you know, why have you conspired against me, you and the son of Jesse? You gave him bread and a sword and inquired of God on his behalf so that he opposes me and waits in ambush, as is the case. So he says, why are you on David's side instead of mine? Let me just summarize that. And Ahimelech said, who is like David among all your servants? Who is faithful like David? And Ahimelech says basically the things that I've already been saying. He's like, no one is more loyal than David. He's your own son-in-law. He's the leader of your bodyguard, and he is honored in your house. Like, everyone loves David. He is totally faithful to you, and he's your son-in-law. He says, and then he asks this question. He says, was it only today that I began to inquire of God on his behalf? It's a little bit different than how the NIV phrases it, but both are pretty good. And he says, far be it from me. The king should not accuse his servant or any of his father's house, for your servant is not aware of all of this, nor in part, not in whole or in part. So he's saying, look, A, no one is more loyal than David. David, he's basically saying you're wrong. David is not lying in wait for you. Okay, this is not an ambush. There's no reason for you to suspect Saul. That is craziness. Secondly, no reason for you to suspect David. Secondly, don't accuse me of doing something sinful. Neither me nor my father's house have ever done anything against you, O king. And he says, and moreover, this is, of course, not the first time I've ever inquired of God about David. David is the one anointed to be king. Now, he doesn't say this out loud because Ahimelech is not an idiot. But he's saying, like, of course this is not the first time I've inquired of God for him. Like, he is the commander-in-chief of the army. He has seen me before. We know each other. Like, we're dudes, okay? And I have prayed concerning him because I am concerned about Israel. And he says, and as for anything that David may have done wrong, I have no idea about it, that I don't know anything about it, that sounds crazy to me. But the king said, you will surely die, Ahimelech, you and your whole father's house. And he says to the messengers who are stationed beside him, he says, turn and kill the priests of the Lord, for they too have sided with David. They knew he was fleeing, but they didn't inform me. But the king's servants refused to do it. They will not harm the priests of the Lord. So now, I mean, look at what we see. The king is telling Ahimelech, he's telling the priest, the high priest, he's saying, you're going to die. You and your whole family. And he's telling other people, turn and kill the priests of the Lord because they're siding with David. And they're like, no, we're not killing priests. Like, sorry, Solly. Like, that just is not a thing that's about to happen. And they say they're not going to do it. But the king says to Doeg, the Edomite, a foreigner. You turn and strike down the priest. So Doeg the Edomite turned and struck down the priest. He killed that day 85 men who wore the linen ephod. As for Nob, the city of the priest, Doeg struck down men and women, children and infants, oxen, donkeys, and sheep, all with the sword. So basically what happens is, the king says to Doeg, he says, turn and kill the priests. Apparently Doeg kills, like, every priest he can find, and then kills the wives and children, kills the cattle, sheep, and donkeys. This is basically putting a charam. This is putting a ban on the city. This is what you would do to pagan cities. This is what you would do to godless cities when the Israelites were coming in and there were certain cities that were so pagan, so evil, so wicked, that God said nothing that breathes is allowed to live. And Doeg does this. Now it's interesting that he killed the sheep too. What was Doeg? Doeg was a chief shepherd. And Doeg was there. So probably Doeg lived in the area. He was a neighbor to these people. He might have been a friend of these people. And he kills the sheep that he's tended for so long. Doeg is full of bloodlust and rage. And he does this. This is human evil at its worst. This is human evil at its worst. But one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, escaped and fled to David. His name was Abiathar. And Abiathar told David that Saul had killed the priests of the Lord. Then David said to Abiathar, I knew that day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would certainly tell Saul. And then he says, I'm guilty of all the deaths of your father's house. Stay with me. Don't be afraid. Whoever seeks my life is seeking your life as well. You are secure with me. And so he's saying, so Abiathar flees to David And David says, you know, he says, I'm really sorry. When I saw Doeg, I knew Doeg would inform Saul. And I'm guilty of the bloodshed of your family because I did nothing to prevent it. And he says, stay with me. I will protect you because the guy who wants to kill you wants to kill me too. So we might as well be together. What do we see? I'm out of time now. We're at 15 minutes. But what do we see in this story? We see a lot of things, okay? We see David looking more and more like what we will see from Christ with the destitute and the brokenhearted coming towards him. We also see that David is bearing some responsibility for what he's done. Now, whether that's right responsibility for him to take or not is... That would be a long conversation, and I'm not sure that I could really give you a full answer. David certainly felt moral obligation for it, so was that David taking on moral obligation that wasn't really his? Because people do that. Like, that just because somebody says, I feel guilty, doesn't mean they actually are guilty, right? Like was David right to say that he bore guilt for this? I'm not so sure that he was. I'm not so sure that he was. I'm not sure that he wasn't either. But then, of course, we see the major event that's happening is that Saul, in his self-pity and in his sinful hatred of David, he is now murdering priests by the hand of a foreigner and putting the ban on the city. I mean, this is out-and-out evil. Saul went from being crazy to being evil. And there is a line between those things. There is a line. And Saul has certainly crossed it. And so, again, this points us to what is going to happen later. You know, this careless, brutal murder of those who help David will remind us of the weeping at Ramah, at Herod's murdering of the innocents. You know, a voice is heard in Ramah weeping in great mourning. Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more. And we see this again. We see these patterns return and recur over and over and over again, and this foreshadows what is later going to happen with the slaughter of the innocents under Herod. And so all of this is pointing us to Jesus. It's pointing us sometimes in shadows that are clear, sometimes in shadows that are a little bit crisper, sometimes in shadows that are a little bit dimmer. But we are seeing shadows of who Christ is, and of course we're getting a more full picture of who really these people are. Who is Saul? Who is David? Who are the men that follow both of them? And we're getting a really good picture at human nature as well. Anyways, I've gone a little bit over, but I thank you for your patience, and I hope that this has been a good and meaningful morning Bible study. So join us this evening as we start into the book of Esther, and I look forward to joining you then. Thank you. God bless.